Om Shri Sai Ram. Dear listeners, the time now in our studios is 12:35. A beautiful Thursday and a wonderful afternoon. And so, as it happens every Thursday and every Thursday afternoon, you're being joined by two of us, me, Prem from Team Radio Sai, and Arvind for this week's afternoon satsang. Even as Raghu was leaving, he said that it's a warm afternoon, and I told him that today is not as warm as usual. But even as I walked out, I realized that the afternoon had become more warm than, you know, it was a couple of minutes back. So, yes, Arvind, so welcome to another warm afternoon and a hot afternoon for the afternoon satsang.
Really, Puttaparthi is at its hottest best now, if we can say so. I remember somebody had once said that in Puttaparthi, it is not as if that there are different weathers and climates like cold, hot, or warm, rainy. It's always hot, hotter, and hottest. So, these are the months, especially May and the first part of June, when it gets really hot, temperatures soar and reach even sometimes 44 to 45 degrees centigrade, which can have a very devastating impact. Thanks to Swami's love and grace, we are all housed within a comfortable air-conditioned studio here in the middle of that blazing heat. If not for that, I only shudder to think what would have happened. Even walking back home in the sun for, you know, before when we go for lunch or even in the evening at 5 o'clock, it's so hot that just getting home, it makes you feel so exhausted and tired. Really, summer is sweltering now.
True, and as you said, thanking Swami for the cool studios we're sitting in and thanking Him for everything else, we offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet before we begin this week's afternoon satsang. And, you know, coming to think of it, we have a roof on top of our head and we have things which make our life better, but there's a lot of nature which actually has to put up with this kind of weather. And, you know, to a great extent, we as a species are responsible for the escalating temperatures. But, you know, there's a whole lot of other species which actually have to evolve and equip themselves to put up with this heat.
Correct, Prem. You know, the other day I was just watching one rooster, a hen. They were, you know, the hen and the rooster, they seemed very agitated. They were running about. And I was wondering, what are they doing in the heat? Little did I realize that the heat was the cause for them running about like that. And finally, they ran towards one, you know, in India, what we call a puncture shop. That is a place where if your tires get punctured, you go there for repairs. And the person, you know, sets right the tires. Basically, the tube in the tire. So they ran towards that puncture shop and there was a trough with some dirty water. In all these puncture shops, which are all roadside shops actually, they have a trough of water because that's how they check for where exactly is the puncture on the tube of the tire.
Right.
They fill it up with air and they put it into the trough and keep moving the tube till bubbles come and they locate the exact where the pinpoint the location where the puncture has taken place. So these birds ran to that and they began to drink water from that dirty trough. And then I realized, you know, in hot summer, when we feel thirsty or when we feel exhausted, we just know where to get our water from, or if not, we even know where to get cool drinks from, and we cool ourselves and quench our thirsts. But when summers get so extreme like this, with water bodies everywhere drying up completely, it really is a very, very tough proposition for those animals and birds out there which feel thirsty.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, even a couple of days back, I was reading, somebody had posted saying that, you know, I was walking and I just saw bird falling off from the, you know, branch of a tree because of the heat. It's just that they're not able to manage. And in fact, it's a movement which has started in some of the cities where they keep a trough of water or a small container of water in the balconies or in the terraces, especially for these birds which can come and quench their thirst.
I feel it's a responsibility, Prem, because this, one might argue that this cycle of summer and winter has been going on from the ages. But if we see, throughout the ages, there was a lot of forest land, and forest always had some secret sources of water,
right.
Some sources which don't dry up, perennial sources. But the rate at which we have gone urbanizing the whole earth, if I can say so, everywhere urbanization has taken place, and even in the villages, though it is a village, urban practices such as you know, having waterproof tanks to store the water, lids over every tank.
Right.
Otherwise, in the olden times, in the Indian villages, the only way they would store water is to push it into a tank which was an open tank. Now, to prevent evaporation losses and other percolation losses, it's all made out of concrete and man-made materials which ensure that not a drop leaks out and it's covered. So, really the birds and animals have been put into this kind of difficult situation because of urbanization and man-made problems, you know. At least the animals are a little better, because if you have a cow at home, if you have a dog at home, most of the animals that we see on the road, they, you know, are fed. They are fed or given. But the birds, I really wonder what do they do, because they just have no water in sight. And it's not surprising that a bird just dropped dead like that from a tree because of lack of water.
So dear listeners, if you're listening to us, it's a little thing which we can do for our little wing friends. And, you know, we could pitch in with a little bit of compassion and join this movement which a lot of people are doing, and, you know, just keep a small container of water outside.
A trough of water, a bin, basin, anything.
Right, for these birds. And, you know, and coming to think of it, you know, there is no other species other than the human race which has done some things which has impacted so many other species, you know, in the negative sense. But also, I don't think there are very few species you will be able to study which go out and try to do good for the other species.
Correct.
Like, you know, you have a set of people who are working for turtles. You have a set of people who are trying to revive and increase the number of dolphins. You have a set of people who are trying to, you know, kind of preserve so many endangered species of animals and plants and even birds. So I think this is definitely an increasing sign for all of us. And the more we get involved in such things, I'm sure, you know, we are bringing out, as Swami would say, the humanness, which is an essential aspect of human birth itself.
Yeah, that is the speciality of human birth, you know. We always consider life more valuable than non-life. Though we believe that, you know, divine consciousness pervades everything, I find a living thing more valuable than a non-living thing like a stone, because I feel it has life. Even among living things, you know, we feel animals are, you know, more than plants. That's why, you know, you can cut down or break a plant, you don't feel much. So many things happen. You crush plants even when you walk on the grass. But the same thing, if you cut the head of an animal, you feel so guilty, because all of a sudden there is some speciality that an animal is higher than a plant. It has its five senses. It has a mind, which the plant doesn't have. And there is something in a human that is not there in an animal. That's why humans are considered higher, because apart from a mind and the five senses, the humans have the ability to discriminate, judge and decide, which the animals don't have. So the humans can decide what is good, what is bad, what is permanent, what is impermanent. And I feel this is the time we have to use that good judgment that God has given us to join those who are actually doing for the animals in preserving and conserving. Yesterday, in fact, I happened to see an animation movie which was all about this. It was called The Bee Movie.
Right.
About bees. It was about bees, about how the bees come and, you know, they lodge a complaint against humans for looting them.
Okay.
Of all their life's work, because for them everything is the honey. Their life is honey, their food is honey, their productivity is honey and everything. And how, without doing anything for the bees, man is just looting. And that movie also brought up a scenario of what would happen if the bees also decided only to take and not give. You know, all the pollination and all the flowers that we see, it all happened because of the bees, which are spreading the pollen, which no man-made mechanism can do it so efficiently and perfectly in such a beautiful manner, the pollination and cross-pollination. And the plants die out. If the plants die out, the vegetarian, the herbivore animals die out. If they die out, the carnivore animals, finally it kills all of us. Because every little thing, even the bird and the birds and the bees, the flowers and the trees, all are a vital part of this whole creation, and all need to be vibrant for creation to be vibrant. And dear listeners, that is why this plea that we do whatever little we can to our feathered friends, especially in places like Puttaparthi or other places where temperatures really soar to unbearable heights. If we are not able to bear few minutes in the sun out there, just imagine the condition of the birds.
And definitely, and those are interesting point which you made, you know, the discrimination between animate and inanimate. There's a saying which goes that God sleeps in the inanimate.
Hmm.
And he's awake in plants, he moves in the animals and he discriminates in humans.
So it's ultimately the God in everything, but right. Yet there is an increasing hierarchy.
And that's the important thing. I mean, even as we were discussing this, I remember a conference we had in the Department of Chemistry.
Hmm.
You know, we had a scientist. He was a scientist from the, I think, NCL Pune or something. And he was giving us a discussion about, it was a conference on environmental chemistry. How, as chemists, we should improve the way we look at environment and the way we treat the environment.
Hmm.
And so he made this very important point. He was telling that, you know, Vijnana is science.
Hmm.
Okay, but what we're talking about today is Prajnana. That is that knowledge which will be useful for those around.
Hmm.
And he said, and how do we get that Prajnanam? And he said, Swami has given it in his bhajan. He said, Prabhu darsha bina Prajnana nahi.
Hmm.
He said, unless you see God in the environment around, you will not take to that knowledge.
Oh, it's from that famous bhajan, Hari Bhajana Bina Sukha Shanti Nahi.
And he said, Swami has told, you know, Prabhu Dharisha Bina Prajnana Nahi. Unless you see God in the living and non-living form around, you will not get that wisdom of taking care of them.
Beautiful. You know, talking of birds and Swami, I am reminded of one small incident. It happened when I was in my school days. We were all sitting there, and you know, those were the days when Swami would simply... There would be a big time gap between the darshan and the bhajans. You know, Swami would grant darshan at about 2:30 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would take in people for interviews. The interviews would get over, depending on how long or who the people were, it would go on till about 3:30 or 4 o'clock also sometimes. The bhajans would actually begin at 5:15. So there would be almost an hour gap. And many times Swami would just walk out, you know, take rounds. Those are bonus darshan rounds. And sometime, you know, I remember they even began to keep a sofa outside for Swami.
Right.
Saying that, Swami, as you come out, please sit on the sofa, don't. And, you know, coming to a by story, even in the by story, I remember once when they requested, Swami, why do you keep standing, Swami? Please sit on the sofa and talk to us. You know, I was recollecting this because those were the days when Swami would refuse to sit. He would always stand.
Right.
And we always requested him to sit. And then came a time in the recently when Swami would always be on the chair. And that was the time we would request him, Swami, stand. I wonder, God must be puzzled. When I sit, they request me to stand. When I stand, they request me to sit. But those days we were requesting, Swami, please sit down. At that time, Swami played with words in an inimitable way that only he can. He said, no. I like to keep walking. And I like to keep talking. I am a walkie-talkie, Swami. So, yeah, the walkie-talkie days. One day, Swami thrilled us all by, you know, just sitting on the sofa there.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt thrilled simply because it felt like an achievement. Like, after, post Swami's fall, if at all, you know, we succeed in making Swami stand up and get up, we feel, wow, Swami stood up just for us. Those were the days when he used to always stand, and therefore sitting was something special.
Right.
So we felt that Swami sat just for us. So Swami sat.
And you also have that feeling that, you know, if he's going to sit, then he's going to spend more time.
Correct. Because he's not going to get up and go off inside.
Right.
So Swami sat on that chair, and at that time, a little sparrow came flying.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of sparrows that keep flying in the mandir, and it's such a beautiful sight. And when it came near Swami, we were watching. Swami kept looking at the sparrow. The sparrow kept looking at Swami. It hopped closer to Swami. It came almost till touching distance from his feet. And Swami didn't move his feet. Swami didn't move at all. He was perfectly frozen. And his legs were crossed one on the other.
Mm-hmm.
I even managed to get a picture of this beautiful scene. Mm-hmm. And the sparrow is just about half a foot away from his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And looking up at him. Yeah. And he is bending his head and looking down at the sparrow and smiling. And then the sparrow flew away after some time. And Swami just looked beautifully, as if to say, you know, see, even the sparrow knows where its ultimate succor lies, at the lotus feet of the Lord. But it was such a beautiful scene. And talking about birds, I just remembered this incident that happened.
Especially talking of sparrows and the scene in Mandir, I'm reminded of an incident narrated in Swami's presence.
Hmm.
About a lesson this sparrow had taught, you know, a boy.
Okay.
You know, in those days, those glass chandeliers just above where Swami used to sit was a place where these birds used to continuously try to build their nests.
Okay, that region above. There's actually not, those are not chandeliers, there are bulbs inside.
Right.
And a lot of glass hangings all around to give it an appearance of a massive chandelier.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, somehow, I don't know, even in a natural sense, that's not a very comfortable habitat for birds.
Correct.
Because the lights were on and it would be more bright and warm than, you know, than it's kind of comfortable for birds, because birds would try to build their nests in dark and humid places, right?
Mm.
But somehow these birds will always try to build their nest over there.
Mm.
And invariably those twigs will keep falling because there's no place for it to stay put over there. And
they would build it on the metal.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right. Huh? And every time when Swami used to come, people used to go and clear up that thing just in case anything falls.
The twigs.
Right. So one day when Swami was just coming out, as you said, you know, was coming to sit in that area and talk to boys, just then a few twigs fell. Okay, and there were these boys in the front, and each one was edging the other to go and pick up the twig. So there was this boy who was sitting in the front row, and he was trying to tell the boy beside him to go and pick up the twig. Because invariably when you would go, Swami would notice you.
Hmm.
So then there were these little self-conscious people who wouldn't like to go and, you know, because you never know, sometimes Swami might see that you're jumping up. Swami
being indisciplined.
Being indisciplined. So there were always those courageous ones and there was this self-conscious ones who wouldn't go. And this was one of the self-conscious boys. So he was trying to edge the others around him to go and pick up the thing. So, and everybody else was a little hesitant to go because Swami is looking towards the boys. Okay, and Swami was coming closer and closer. And
so some twigs.
Yeah, and somebody had to go and pick up because it looked messy when Swami comes there. There's something fallen there. And you know, just when somebody was making up their mind to go and pick up, a bird just swooped on, picked up the twig and went up.
Oh, the sparrow.
The sparrow, okay. And this boy said that, you know, he said the message which he got there was very powerful.
Hmm.
He said, see, there is work to be done. And you're doing it for Swami. And there is an opportunity in front of you. If you don't go and grab it, be assured that the work will be done.
You lose the opportunity.
Yeah, the work doesn't depend on you, or the work doesn't wait for you. Here is an opportunity for you. If you don't go and grab it,
you lose the opportunity.
You lose the opportunity. And the bird is teaching him that lesson because, you know, I'm giving you a chance to go and do something for Swami. If you don't do it, I'll do it anyway. Don't worry about it.
Wow. Talking of birds giving lessons, you know, I'm reminded of one more episode which has been recorded in a book written by Miss Joy Thomas.
Okay.
Okay, in that she writes about a lady, you know, who seemed to be having everything going right in life. But then suddenly disaster struck when her daughter, who was about to get married, she committed suicide because of depression.
Hang on. Okay.
Now that her depression led to her suicide, and her suicide led to the mother's depression naturally, because which parent would, every parent would like to die seeing their children. They can't see their children dying in front of their eyes, right? So she was devastated and she did not know what to do. And that was when she got to know about a God incarnate who had apparently come to earth and had made Puttaparthi his residence. So she also got a few books on Swami, she read it and she got very interested because she felt that she, you know, she was like a person drowning who grabs at straws. Any sign of hope or for a better life, for a happier life, she was ready to grab at it. And somebody told her that you go to Swami and he will give you. So after some time she made arrangements and she arrived at Puttaparthi. When she arrived at Puttaparthi, she got to know that Swami had gone to Kodaikanal. So she did not want to give up. So she took a vehicle and she landed up at Kodaikanal. And she had her darshan. And she found that every time she went for darshan, she felt wonderful and great. She felt uplifted. She felt elevated. But that lasted only during the darshan. In Swami's presence. Once darshan was over and she returns back to her room, she feels very depressed and she says, Swami, do something. Swami, do something. Swami, do something. By now, you know, her heart had been fully pledged to Swami. She was in love with Swami, and because she had experienced what kind of uplifting Swami brings just by His presence. But she was not having His presence all throughout, you know. So what to do? So she used to keep praying to Swami that, Swami, do something, Swami, do something. Then she goes for darshan, and in the darshan lines, as Swami comes walking by, He looks at her and tells her, I will meet you tonight.
Okay.
And Swami walks. Now, she is very confused. She was wondering, how can Swami meet me tonight? He's staying here in his residence and I am staying in my hotel room. And Swami doesn't give any darshan or interviews at night. So what does he mean by he'll meet me at night? That was when she discussed with some of her friends and whoever were there, you know, not friends actually, mm-hmm. people there, Sai brothers and sisters.
Right.
They told her that, you know, Swami has more than one ways.
Mm-hmm.
They told her that, you know, Swami comes in dreams, Swami gives visions.
Right.
So it could be when any one of these. So she was very hopeful. And that evening it began to rain very heavily, and Kodaikanal is a hill station, it gets very cold there. That is one of the reasons, you know, Swami used to go to Kodaikanal and Vrindavan in Bangalore during the summer, so that the devotees and others in Prashanti do not feel the heat and struggle this way. Because invariably wherever Swami is, there are huge crowds. So that is why Swami would go to Bangalore or Kodaikanal, so that the crowds don't feel the heat. And so in fact Kodaikanal became cold because of the heavy thunderstorm and rain. And in the night, she heard a knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
So she was wondering, who is it at this time in the night? She opened the door. There is a person from the hotel management
mm-hmm.
who says that, "Madam, just outside your door here, he has this little bird that seems to be frozen stiff mm-hmm. because of the cold rain. It's fallen here. I don't know what to do with the bird." And he had knocked her door. So she said, "Give it to me, I'll take care of the bird." So she takes that little bird into her cupped hands and closes the door, puts the bird on a towel, dries up the bird, and keeps it in her cupped hand till the warmth of her hand thaws the bird back to life.
Right.
It opens its eyes, starts chirping,
mm-hmm.
and starts hopping about in the room. And she's happy to see that. And she feels that once the rain stops, I'll let the bird out.
Mm-hmm.
The bird hops under her cot and stays there. So she feels it's fine. Let the bird stay there at night. I'll sleep on my bed, and the next day morning, maybe I'll leave the bird to go. So that's what happens. The next day morning, she gets up and she sees that the bird is nowhere. So she assumes it must be right under her bed. So she bends down, but it's very dark under the bed.
Right.
So she's not able to see the bird, but she senses the presence of the bird, you know.
Okay.
It's twittering, tweeting and just hopping about. So she's trying to call, "Little bird, come out, I want to free you." And just, the bird just doesn't listen. It tells, "Come out, come out, come out, come out." The bird is not listening. Finally, she gets so irritated, she talks aloud to the bird.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "If you do not come out of the darkness, how can I set you free?" And then she says that even as she said that statement, something hit her from within. She could almost visualize Swami talking to her and telling her the very same words that she had used. That is, "If you choose not to come out of the darkness, how can I set you free?" And then it strikes her, "Oh my God. Oh my God, I am going back to my depression and my moroseness. Every time Swami is pulling me out, I am going back in. I need to do my bit. I need to do my best, and God will do the rest." And even as this realization dawned on her, she says that the bird was out from below the bed, awaiting her to set it free. She just picked up the bird in her cupped hands, took it to the window, opened the window, and then the bird just flew free. And then she said she understood. She connected everything. Swami saying that, "I will meet you at night." And then Swami giving her the resolution to her problem, the answer to her question. Her life changed from that day onward. So, you know, it's not just once or twice. Many occasions where birds have been Swami's messenger to give us a message.
Right. And I think this is not just the only message we can learn from nature and from birds in specific. And I think there are a lot of occasions where Swami has taught us little lessons like this. And maybe we will try to discuss those lessons today. But before that, we're half an hour into the program. Maybe we should take a small break and play a nice song. And I'm going to play a song which is sung by the very popular singer Kavita Krishnamurti from her very popular album. So we'll resume our discussion after this.
Oh,
Yes, Arun, what a beautiful song that was. And I think without our knowledge, it was quite well placed in our discussion.
Exactly. Means it came at the end of a episode in which she was crying out to Swami. Here also in the song, Kavita ji is crying out to Swami, telling that, Swami, without your darshan, I'm thirsting, I'm parched. And it's so apt that we were also discussing about birds being parched.
Really, even as we put out water for the birds, let's hope that Swami quenches our thirst for his...
I'm sure he will, Prem. I'm sure he will, because if we are able to see him in everything, in the birds, he will ensure that he also shows his presence through everything, that is the birds or the beasts or the animals. And the experience that we discussed just now of that bird in Kodaikanal and even before that, it all shows that only. I mean, anybody who went through that will be convinced that that bird was Swami. Because in reality, it is Swami. If we start seeing, we will see more of it.
Absolutely.
That is the magic of faith.
Right. In fact, you know, most often in life, when you see, when you are faced with unpleasant events, we are so hit by the unpleasantness of the event that we actually, you know, fail to see the beautiful picture behind that event. And you know, why I'm saying this is, if you've been in Parthi, if you've walked around the little alleys in Parthi, you would have definitely faced the problem of receiving blessings from above.
Correct.
You know, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the reason why they call that blessings, I was asking a friend of mine, why do you call droppings of birds which come on you as blessings? Yeah, it comes from above and it comes unexpectedly. Just like blessings. Yeah, and that's the problem, you know, when you walk here, some of these birds, I think they find Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram, just like any of us, the most peaceful place to live in, you know, considering the kind of urbanization which is happening. So all trees are filled with birds here, and it's so difficult to walk under them because, you know, you might land up dirtying your clothes. But every time that happens, we get annoyed by it. But actually, it's such a marvel of nature itself. Like, if you look at the mammals and the birds, you know, in mammals, you have the excretory system and you have the urinary system. That is for solid waste and liquid waste.
Yeah, actually, the urinary system is called the excretory system.
Right.
And the other is the digestive system, which...
Which is for the solid waste
solid
and for the
liquid, yeah,
liquid
correct.
Waste. Right. And, you know, if you look at it, when you come to birds, one of the most essential need of a bird is that it has to be light.
For flight.
Right? For flight, it has to be light. So what God has done, He has merged these two systems.
Correct.
Instead of having a solid waste disposal system and a liquid waste disposal system, He's merged it and He's made one system. And that is also a reason why they, you know, compared to mammals, they more frequently have to excrete. Because they don't have to carry around that waste. That will be an extra weight. And if you look at it, actually it is such a beautiful system which without any fuss, God has put in place.
Correct.
Just to make sure that, you know, the bird is suitably built for flight. But, you know, we are so annoyed by the experience of having our clothes dirtied that we actually fail to see the marvel of nature behind it.
Very right, Prem. And we also fail to see how we ourselves are actually responsible for many of such things. For example, sparrows and pigeons and doves and the ravens and crows, which are most commonly seen, at least in Indian cities. I think it's the same case in many of the foreign country cities also. But some of the most commonly seen birds are the sparrows, the ravens and crows, and the pigeons and the doves.
Right.
If you see in India today, the number of sparrows in cities and towns is drastically coming down. And, you know, this was the analysis done by Dr. Salim Ali. He's a foremost ornithologist from India, and he's one of the pioneers who made a comprehensive list of all the birds found in India. In fact, his autobiography itself is called The Fall of the Sparrow. Okay, so Dr. Salim Ali, and during his days there were no photographs.
Okay.
So he would describe the bird and then make a sketching of it to perfection and get a plate printed. So all the books can be printed with those drawings. You know, that was how he propagated knowledge about the birds in order to conserve the birds. So coming back to the sparrow, the sparrows were wild birds that would build their nests in the forests. But as forests cleared, they adapted themselves to live in the cities, cohabit with the people, you know. So for their nests, they would find crevices and gaps and burrows. Because those days, you know how building technology was. They bring blocks of stones and put mortar and build. Right. There will be lots of crevices and gaps in which sparrows would nest. But today with modern construction, with perfect finishes, with such kinds of, with such symmetry and such precision, there is no nesting spot for the sparrow. The sparrows are dying out because they have no place where they can propagate. And they have lived for so long along with us in the towns and cities that they no longer find it possible to live in the forest. There are forest sparrows, definitely. But the kind of sparrows that we find in the towns and cities are dying out, and you can have a look. 20 years back when I lived in Bangalore, it was teeming with sparrows. In fact, I felt that for every crow in Bangalore, there were 2 sparrows. But today, it's almost non-existent. That's why in Prashanti also, you will see maximum number of sparrows in the mandir. Currently the Samadhi area, that area. Why? Because if you notice, Swami's Bhajanal and old mandir is built in the old style. It has got those gaps. It is not that perfect finished building. You touch the wall, there are lots of undulations.
Right.
It's been built in the old style because it was built in 1950. And therefore, there are still crevices and gaps where sparrows and pigeons are able to make their nests. You will never see that happening at Yajur Mandir or any of the modern buildings. So, in a way, we are only responsible for making these birds domestic. And now we are responsible for wiping them out in large numbers.
Right. You know, in fact, even in, if you see in olden houses, there used to be this tradition that if a bird builds a nest in the house, it should not be disturbed.
Correct.
Used to have that. I think it's from the simple belief that, you know, if the bird has chosen to live with us, why shouldn't we choose to live with the birds?
And in fact, you know, they build around some taboos like that. Some of the birds that nest at homes, okay, they say that if you damage its eggs, there's a village, superstition.
Right.
If you damage the eggs of the bird, they say that your cow will start giving blood instead of milk. And therefore, you should not harm it. You know, modern science may just argue logically, telling that this is a superstition, it should be done away with. Fine, it's a superstition, but what purpose it is serving?
Right.
That is the reason, you know, for whatever reason, I feel all these superstitions sometimes are very metaphorical. Blood, giving out blood means dying out. And in a way, our ancients in their wisdom realized the connection between the birds and our life itself. And therefore, they summarize the whole thing by telling you, kill the birds, you are killing yourselves. And therefore, maybe the superstition arose. Today, unable to see that beautiful link that exists connecting everything, we just say it's a superstition. I broke 3 eggs of the bird, my cow is still giving milk. I mean, I feel we should go by the spirit of these superstitions and realize why they are in place. Because even today, Prem, I have photographed at least about 120 species of birds in and around Puttaparthi itself.
Wow.
Puttaparthi doesn't attract only people from all around the world, it also attracts birds apparently from all around the place. And such a bewildering array of birds exists, from the smallest hummingbirds hummingbirds and these sunbirds, mm-hmm. which are just about 2 inches in size,
okay.
to the large painted storks which stand an impressive 3.5 feet in height.
Mm-hmm.
So many birds visit Puttaparthi. And I feel that is one aspect that many are not aware of. When we come to Prashanti, we can do a lot of bird watching.
I think that's also because we are so preoccupied with Swami, with Darshan and with all these things that it's a good thing, of course. I'm not telling that it's a flaw in us.
Hmm.
But the fact is, now, if we were to enjoy Swami, we would also enjoy the nature around.
Correct.
In fact, you know, that's one of the principles of Zen philosophy, you know, of being aware all the time.
Hmm.
He said, you cannot discount this and that. You cannot separate divinity from creation. You cannot separate God from nature.
Correct.
If you love God, you will love nature. You cannot say that, you know, I love God, but nature is separate.
In fact, Swami has said in his discourse, relating all the 4, Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti and Parameshti, saying Parameshti is God, of whom Srishti or nature is a limb. And for nature, the limb is Samashti, which is society. And for Samashti, the limb is Vyashti, the individual. So all 4 are linked in a hierarchy, the individual, the society, nature and God. So if we worship God, we have to worship all the others, that is the individual, the society, as well as nature.
Absolutely.
And there are many reasons to do that, Prem. For example, if we see, I won't go into the 120 varieties, but even if we take a sample, There's one bird which is called as a red wattled lapwing.
Okay.
You know, it's the size of a hen. Not in width. In height, it's about the height of a hen, but it's a very thin bird. It has a red beak. And the most characteristic thing about this bird is its cry.
Okay.
They call it the did you do it bird. Because when it calls out, apparently it sounds like, did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? Mm-hmm. And it's very loud cries.
Okay.
And you know what this bird does? This bird acts as a self-appointed watchman.
Mm-hmm.
You go to any lakeside or any area, a paddy field where there are many kinds of birds, at least 5-6 species, and many of them, there will be about 100 birds there. You go there, you want to photograph them. When you go close, if this red wattled lapwing happens to see you, you're in. Your whole mission you have to abort, because it takes to the air and goes around screeching loudly that, you know, there is one guy here, there's one human in sight. They're all scared of humans. It doesn't do this if a buffalo walks in there.
Okay.
Unless it walks close to its nest. It doesn't do it if a dog walks in. But if you or me walk in, because I think that is their history has taught them that humans are destructive. It goes around doing this and all the birds fly away. Within 2 minutes, there will be nothing left there. You would have seen 100 birds, all would have flown away. And it does this, I don't know what benefit it gets from the other birds, right, what the other birds do back in return for it. But this bird, you know, I felt, first every time I see it, I used to get irritated because it is spoiling my photo shoot there by scaring away all the other birds. But then I began, as you said, if you look in the proper light, we are able to see, began to admire this bird for its selflessness, you know. Day in and day out it's doing this. Even a person happens to pass by mistake, you know, not that he's interested in the birds. Even then it goes around warning everybody that there is a person, there is a human in sight over here. And it cries, 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 and day in and day out it does this duty without expecting any of the other birds to do anything in return. I felt that this was such a perfect sevadal, a sevak, you know.
Definitely. And as you said, you know, that's the perspective which is required.
Hmm.
And when you have the perspective, what you see is so different.
Hmm.
And even as you were saying, you know, there are so many examples of people who do seva selflessly. I'm reminded of a person whom I met when we as old students had gone for some activity.
Hmm.
And he is actually a native of Andhra Pradesh. I don't know who, one of the devotees of Swami was kind of settled in Puttaparthi.
Hmm.
And every time a group goes out to do any kind of seva, he would accompany them.
Mm.
And even otherwise, he goes by himself and sees what he can do in these villages around and all that.
Mm.
And needless to say, he had caught Swami's attention. Because
okay.
He had come as part of various groups to Swami. Mm. Because he had been a part of so many other seva opportunities. So Swami had, you know, as a blessing, given him a materialized golden ring.
Mm.
Given it to this person. And during one of his visits to the villages, when he found that, you know, they needed some, they were having water scarcity. So he wanted to build a tank for them and dig a well. You know what he did? He was not a very well-off person. He just sold the ring which Swami had given him.
What Swami had materialized for him?
Which Swami had materialized for him.
Oh my God.
Huh. And he dug a well and built a tank.
For the village.
For the village.
Hmm.
And a few months later, Swami looked at him and said, hey, where's the ring I gave you?
Hmm.
And very diligently he said, Swami, I did this. And he said, why did you do that? And again Swami materialized another ring and gave it to him. And Swami blessed him again. And this person again, you know, during another visit of his to a village, he found that they needed something, some medical problem and some health. So he sold this ring also and helped them away.
Oh.
Okay, and after doing this a few times, Swami called him and said, hey, you know, Swami was, I would say Swami was happy with him because he was so selfless. You know, when Swami gives you a ring, it's not an object, it's not a material. It is a sign of blessing and it is a sign of connect. But even that he was ready to sacrifice when he wanted to help another person. And so eventually Swami materialized a ring which was of a very, very low material value, metal.
Brass or copper.
Brass
maybe.
Or bronze or copper, I don't know what it was. And gave it to him and Swami said, this you cannot sell. And this will always be with you. And in fact, he showed us that ring and he said, this is the final ring Swami gave. You know. I think
really hats off to this red wattle lapwing among humans who does this kind of seva without any expectation of return. It's really beautiful. You know, like this, every little bird that we see around, we have something that we can learn from them. For example, there's a Baya weaver bird.
Right.
If you have a look at its nest, it's a small bird the size of a sparrow. It has a golden yellow crest, not golden yellow, a bright yellow crest the male has it. Mm-hmm. And the speciality of this bird is that it builds very unique shaped nests.
Okay.
The nest is like a tube made of fibers, mm-hmm. coir and fibers, with a bulbous center, and then again it tapers towards the end. It's okay. That it's almost shaped like the digestive system with the esophagus, the stomach, and the intestine, you know.
Right.
Top, there's a tube, then there's a big bulbous thing, and then the tube. Tapering end. And they build these nests always above a water body for safety, so that, you know, no snake or something comes in. In the branches overhanging a water body, they build this nest.
Okay.
And they make it to such perfection that even if it's slightly off in its shape or size or structure, they discard and build another.
Mm-hmm.
Discard and build another. It's such a labor of love. Goes on and almost 5-6 nests. That's why when you see the nests of the Baya weaver bird, you go to a colony, you'll see about 30 nests. But out of those 30 nests, only 7 or 8 will be habited. The others are all, you know, damaged pieces. This kind of thirst for excellence, for perfection, is so admirable in the Baya weaver bird. And the female, when it comes to inspect the nest that the male has built, it's also very strict in its evaluation. Unless it's perfect, it's not accepted. And when I was photographing these birds, I felt that they strongly stand for that message which Swami says, that true yoga is perfection. Yogaha karmasu kaushalam. True yoga is perfection in your action. And these Baya weaver birds stand for such perfection in action, and they keep doing it.
And I know, you know, talking of perfection action, the example which comes to my mind, which may be a little off really, but I feel it's the example of Shabari, right?
You know, the old lady
in the Ramayana, where her guru tells her that you stay in this ashram just before he takes samadhi. He says, you stay in this ashram because one day the Lord will come here as Rama and you will have the opportunity of serving him. And, you know, she goes about getting the whole place ready for that visit. And she doesn't know when he's going to come. And the story goes that it takes decades and decades before Rama actually comes there. And, you know, what she finally does is, the story goes that she keeps fruits every day ready.
Just in case Rama comes. She clears the forest path. Keeps her home ready. Keeps the fruits. Every day she repeats in a monotonous cycle for any one of us, awaiting Rama.
And, you know, when finally Rama comes and she's offering these berries, she bites each berry and sees if it is sweet and then gives it. The ones which are not sweet or not not the sweetest ones are discarded.
Okay.
And if you actually look at the scene, you know, when you offer something to God, tradition and all that has it, that you should not defile it with your...
God should be the first to partake.
Right.
And then
you're not even supposed to smell something which you offer to God. Even the flowers which you offer to God, you're not supposed to smell them. Or, you know, that's the tradition. But here was a lady who didn't mind defiling that prasadam which she was giving, because she wanted to make sure that only the best goes to him. You know, she might be losing out on some of the merits which would come by offering
tradition.
You know, tradition. But she said, I don't care about it, but what I offer should be the best. I think that is a lesson, and as you're saying, the Baya weaver bird, I think maybe...
Perfection.
I think nothing is a better tool to worship God than through perfection.
Really, wow, Prem. I'm telling some beautiful qualities of some birds, and you're coming up with some amazing episodes which highlight those things. Well, then, there's another bird, you know. It's called the Indian roller, or the blue jay. Well, one speciality of this bird is that it has been considered as the state bird of Andhra Pradesh and even of the neighboring Karnataka state. In India, it is considered as a state bird. It's about the size of a crow, and it has two shades of blue on its body, and it looks quite beautiful in terms of its colors. But its head, you know, is a little ungainly. You feel that the head is a little big compared to the proportion of its body, and if only the head had been a little smaller, it would be perfect proportion. And so, the first time when I was photographing this bird, these were the thoughts that were going on, and I was shooting. And suddenly, you know, this bird, something disturbed the bird, and it took to flight. And when it took to flight, oh my God, I was just blown away by what I saw. It opened up its wings, and when it opens and unfolds its wings, you can see that beneath the wings, there are almost 6 to 7 different shades of blue. mm-hmm. brilliant shades of blue, and then the wings are so huge compared to its body size, and when it opens up its wings and it takes to flight, the bird looks so perfect and beautiful, mm-hmm. perfectly in symmetry. The head no longer seems large in comparison, and it's so beautiful that I felt that this is something that is unique, typical of beauty, you know. It may not look beautiful externally, because beauty is not an external quality. Beauty is something within. And what this bird holds within its wings and inside is not seen till it flies. So I just felt that this bird, the state bird of Andhra Pradesh and Karnataka, is teaching a lesson that beauty, first, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. But more important than that is, beauty is an internal quality. It is something within, that it may not be seen directly externally. And though if we see in a scientific way, even that is supposed to be external beauty only, but this message hit me when I saw the Baya Weaver bird.
Absolutely. You know,
in awe of nature, the way it taught this lesson.
Right. No, talking of beauty and talking of beauty which can actually inspire, the one which comes to mind is that of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. You know, the first experience of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, he actually has when he sees a birds flying in the background of dark clouds.
Oh, a group of seven birds,
right.
Yes.
Huh. You know, he's walking across the fields. Suddenly he looks up, he sees these white birds in the background of dark clouds.
Okay.
And you know, that contrast is so beautiful, and that scene is so beautiful, he actually faints. He goes into Nirvikalpa Samadhi.
Wow.
You know, and talking of that, when you talk in science, we have this history which shows us that most of human discoveries are serendipitous, you know, accidental. But then I think it was Louis Pasteur who said, yes, serendipity does play a big role in science.
But fortune favors the trained mind.
So similarly, like, you know, how science has grown because of accidental events which have struck trained mind. I think similarly, beauty also actually strikes a trained heart. You know, when you're prepared to see that beauty and go that one step higher, I think that's what happened with Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. And the fact is, we are seeing this beauty all the day long.
Really, Prem, I cannot claim to have had Nirvikalpa Samadhi, but it's an inexpressible joy that you feel when you see that, you know. In fact, when I look back and see, on a hot summer day, running behind a bird, because it flies, you want to photograph it, you keep chasing, it looks like madness. But if a sane person is ready to indulge in the madness, logically the person must be receiving something great, right? And I really say that the beauty of the birds inspires such joy. And as you said, maybe, you know, we need to train our hearts to be able to appreciate this beauty. We need to focus in seeing our dear Swami who is present in all these birds. Talking of which, I am reminded of another bird, the green bee eater. I feel it's an epitome of focus. Okay. It's a small bird, very small bird. Not very small actually. It's in between the size of a sparrow and a crow. So it might be about 10 inches in length. It has a very long tail, like a thin wire, which it uses for balancing in flight.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because its flight is such an extremely dexterous thing that it does. It has got a thin pointed beak, and it's called a bee eater because it snatches bees in midair in flight.
Okay.
It's amazing. You know, I have seen how this bird does. It just takes off and flies and makes a random but very sharp curve.
Okay.
And then lands back, and in its beak there's a bee. And the bee is still alive, you know, it's struggling. The bird then tosses the bee up such that it gets oriented head first. Because it has a sting at the end, you remember? The bee has a sting at the end of the tail. It becomes head first, goes into the beak. Every toss it results that way. And then as the bee goes into the beak, the last part it just snaps so that the sting falls off and the bird eats the bee. And that's how it actually catches bee, snatching them out from midair. I mean, it is ultimate focus to be able to snatch out something so tiny which is flying at such a speed, because it's not easy. You know, you may be able to swat a mosquito, but it's not easy to swat a bee, because a bee flies fast and hard. But that's amazing, that kind of focus that this bird has. Like that there are so many birds, the painted stalks.
Yes, you know, talking of focus, I think the example which Swami always gives is that of the Chataka bird, right?
Yes.
The bird, Swami says, it drinks only from the cloud, the water
Correct.
Which comes from the cloud. It doesn't drink from puddles and pools.
And the Chataka bird is very much seen.
Is it? In
Parthi. I forget its name. It's a kind of the cuckoo species only.
Right.
I forget the name. But if you Google up cuckoo and Chataka bird, you will see.
Okay.
And that species comes only during the rainy season.
Wow.
Only in September, October, you will see it. And all the koel sounds, cuckoo sounds that you hear during the rainy season is of this Chataka bird. It's a black and white bird.
Okay.
That is seen only during the rainy season.
That's beautiful. I mean, because I had a mental image of that being a mythical
bird. It's not mythical.
But you know, Swami says that, you know, that however thirsty it is, and however stormy and the thunder is striking all around, the bird will always fly towards that cloud which is about to rain and, you know, to drink that water. And Swami would say, if your focus is like that bird, if you are in search of God like that bird, you know, the fear of other things striking you does not even bother you a bit, then you will find God.
Perfectly. Legend says that the Chataka bird does not drink from any of the water sources on earth.
Right.
It takes directly only from the heavens. And, you know, really I have seen, though it is said that this is a legend, I can assure you that if it is not raining, you will not see this bird. And let the monsoons arrive, suddenly out of nowhere, so many of these birds pop up. So it is so inspiring to see these birds and get that message.
Beautiful. I think we'll just take a quick break here. You know, the culmination of whatever we've spoken now is there's so much to learn from nature, and we have just taken one aspect of nature, and we feel that, as you said, you know, since Swami has kind of fine-tuned us to learn from whatever you see, I think that's when we learn. It's not like we are living with this all through our life. But unless we are trained to learn from whatever we see, these will not even occur to us. And I think that's why we need to be grateful for Swami, and everybody has to be grateful for a guru in their life.
Correct.
Because that's when, you know, even though the lessons are aplenty around you, you would never imbibe them unless you've been trained to see them.
Perfect.
So I'm going to play a song which teaches, which sings about nature being our preacher.
Oh, okay.
So it's a song sung by little children, a nice, sweet one. So let's listen to that.
Follow their directions, it will change our
Yeah, Prem. Continuing with, you know, our birds. Since the time is running out, maybe I'll stop. But one more bird, just one more bird, because I'm just amazed at how many things, you know, each bird has something unique about it, and that unique characteristic about that bird teaches us a beautiful lesson. If you take the bush lark, is another sparrow-sized bird, which is brown in color. It doesn't look anything amazing or nothing out of the blue, but it has got a very melodious note that it keeps chirping.
Okay.
And the best thing is, it seems to have a great repertoire of calls.
Mm-hmm.
Such a repertoire that very few birds have. I don't know, maybe humans come close to having so many different kinds of sounds that they make. But otherwise, usually birds stick to one or two, three kinds of sounds. One they make when they're happy, one they make when they're alarmed, that's all. But this bush lark has so many kinds of sounds. And that is what first attracts you, because usually once you start learning the sound of the bird, you feel, okay, this is this bird, this is that bird. Suddenly you hear a sound, you wonder which it is, you go and see it's a bush lark. Next time you hear and wonder which bird it is, you go and see it's a bush lark. Next time you hear which is this sound, you go and see. I mean, personally I have heard it make at least 15 types of sounds.
Okay.
And then I observed one more beautiful thing about the bush lark. Every time, you know, if you go close to it and it gets scared, it takes off.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's landing in another place, it makes a parachute kind of things with its wings.
Okay.
It looks so beautiful. And it gradually, gently glides down like a parachute, exactly like a parachute. Flies up into the air, goes to some other spot, and like a parachute, it comes down. And then I saw that it is not a behavior that it does when it's alarmed. If you just leave a bush lark by itself, wherever it is, whenever it takes up, it lands always in this fashion. And I feel this is so acrobatic and so showy, actually. But whom is it showing off to? It doesn't show off to anybody. It just seems to do it for the joy of doing it. I mean, it can land normally too. But I don't know why it does this. I just felt that the lesson that it is showing is that when you have some talent or skill or something, it's not that you have to use it to impress others or show off to others. The talent itself, the expression of the talent itself, if you are able to feel happy with it, that is what it is meant for self-joy, because in yourself is seated the Lord. When you're doing it just for your satisfaction and joy, that is one way to make the Lord also happy.
Absolutely. I think that's why Swami has always spoken of self-satisfaction as a virtue. You know, you can understand Swami saying devotion, faith and self-confidence, but self-satisfaction was a very important virtue. In fact, Swami was saying that's one of the necessary things for self-realization.
Perfect.
And you know, to look at it, Swami has always, you know, insisted that whatever joy is, it comes from within. And you know, the story which Swami says of the dog which tries to bite the bone, and you know, it thinks that the blood which it is tasting is coming from the bone. And Swami says, no, actually it's coming from itself.
Correct.
And it doesn't realize. I think that is the thing. Whatever we do, you know, if I create something and someone comes and appreciates me, if I paint a beautiful picture and somebody says, wow, it's wonderful, actually the joy which is coming is actually coming from within.
Correct.
It is just that it is being kindled by some kind of an appreciation which is coming from without.
Correct.
Right? I think the moment when we do something absolutely for the joy which comes only from within,
when it doesn't need an external kindling,
right,
for the joy to express,
I think that will be unsullied joy. And if you see, you know, when we look at creation, we say God created the whole of creation and He wanted somebody to enjoy it, and so He created man. I think it's our making. Because God created, if you look at it, you know, now when they study the ocean, they say 90% of the ocean is still not to be
discovered.
Is unraveled, right?
Yes.
And they say even the deeper they go into the ocean, they see they're seeing colors and they're seeing species they've never seen before, which are much, much more beautiful than what man has seen in all these centuries.
Exactly.
So it just goes to say that God has created everything for His own joy, you know, and I think that is a lesson for all of us. If we can do and things and be perfect just for the joy of being perfect, I think the joy which comes out of it will be absolutely blemishless.
You know, when you speak about doing things for the joy of being perfect and, you know, not to please somebody or anything else, because the joy of being perfect comes from pleasing God. That's what I feel.
Right.
When you please God itself, that is when you're perfect. And at that, when you're doing that, nothing else matters. Slightly tangential maybe, but I'm reminded of one very poignant episode that took place in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in the Vrindavan hostel at that time. Swami, actually, there are reasons which I do not wish to dilate now, but Swami was upset with the boys, with the students, and he was quite upset with them, and so much so that he stopped one of the most important activities that characterize Vrindavan, which is a tri session.
Okay.
During those days, it is said that every day after the darshan bhajan session in the evening, Swami would call all the students inside his residence in Trai Vrindavan for a Trai session.
Right.
And Swami stopped that because he said, what is the use? The boys are not listening. And he said, boys are becoming bad. The only Trai session he gave during that period was when he just, you know, lambasted all the boys. He said, all are bad. They do not realize the value of what they are getting. And at that time, you know, there was a Vice Chancellor's conference that was scheduled in Puttaparthi, I think in 1986. And Swami said, Vice Chancellors are coming, so Swami is going there. Okay, but anyway, you know, they realize, Vice Chancellors are realizing the value of Swami, but students don't. Like that, you know, Swami, you know, minced no words while saying that. And then he said, Swami said, boys are getting all dirty ideas, bad ideas. And the reason for this is all these dirty novels.
Okay.
You know, Swami doesn't usually separate the word dirty and novel. He feels every novel is dirty because he says that, you know, this he says in the Prema Vahini in the first chapter itself, in the treatise that he has written. He says that books that do not talk about the eternal or books that have not been penned by somebody who has realized the eternal, any books that come out of this category will only increase confusion in your mind and therefore avoid them. Only the books that have been inspired by what is eternal and the books that have been penned by somebody, that is the saints, the sages, all other kind of books are, you know, rubbish. That's what Swami says, you know, in the Prema Vahini, which is not inspired by eternal values, it's useless. So Swami said this, and when Swami said this, two students, you know, they were talking to each other and they said, you know, many times Swami has got upset with us. And we just keep telling Swami, please forgive us, please forgive us. We don't even know what has upset him. And Swami becomes fine. That used to be a constant happening practice. You know, Swami gets upset, the boys plead, Swami becomes fine. Then they spoke to each other saying that this is the first time where Swami has explicitly said what has displeased him. That is novels. So he said, let us rid ourselves of all the novels. So they called informally all the students, they went and requested them saying, if any one of you have novels, kindly discard them.
Okay.
And they said that many boys in the hostel, not many, quite a few of them came forward and threw away the books. And what did they do to the books? They just set them on fire. Mm-hmm. But then there were many who did not part with the novels that they had. So these two, one day, they just went room by room, broke open the locks on the cupboard,
okay,
pulled out the novel, burnt it, left the in front of that cupboard,
mm-hmm,
on the floor there, so that everybody, when they see the lock broke open,
mm-hmm,
they see that what has happened here.
They realize it's only for the book.
You know, it was a very bold and courageous step, which could have had many dangerous problems later on, because you're breaking open locks of different cupboards. What if somebody says that you stole this from me or you did something, even if they have not done it, but out of anger because they did this.
Right.
But they did not care. They said that Swami doesn't like the novel, we'll just burn and throw them out. And that's what they did. They set, it was almost like a bonfire of all the novels. These two boys did it. And you know, I feel that is the, you can today question and ask, what if somebody had said that you stole my watch? What if somebody said that you did this? Yes, we can sit here in an air-conditioned studio and pose those questions maybe. But the power of a good deed that is done with a pure intent is such that even if critics are there, you know, nobody had the guts to question these two boys. Everyone, though they did not express it in their heart, wished that they had the courage to do what these two boys had done. Well, and you know what? The next day, it's not as if Swami miraculously responded and became all fine. It took almost 4 more months and the story goes on. It's a long story of how finally Swami became fine. But that is another beautiful aspect that shows that when you do truly a pure thing with a pure intention, It doesn't even need the physical sanction of Swami. It was not necessary for Swami to physically come and tell, I am very happy with what you did. But Swami indeed said that 4 months later. But at that time Swami did not say it. And yet nobody had the guts to question, because the intent, and this was pure, and it was done without fear of anything, just to please God. And that is where, you know, I think we can learn from the bush lark, that whatever we do just to please Lord. Once we please God, the world, even if it appears to be unhappy at that time, when the time comes, everything will be happy, everyone will be fine. All that we have to ensure, that is our intention is pure, and we are doing it to please God.
Absolutely. And you know, that's again that self-confidence, which comes out of a good thought, which is backed by inspiration, right? Beautiful and strong inspiration. You know, reminded of another story which Swami tells, maybe this might be the last one, about the birds. And I think Swami has told this on many occasions, when, you know, Swami would say that the bird which sits on a branch.
Oh, yes. That story, I remember, you know, because one of my classmates, he told this to me, and I joined in the 11th grade.
Right.
He was here from his first standard. And so he said that in an interview when they were in the 8th grade, Swami narrated this story of the sparrow on the branch that you say.
Okay.
You know, he says that Swami built up, you know, a kind of a suspense. He told all the students that they were all little boys, 8th standard. And, well, not very little, but ages 12, 13. And Swami tells them that here is a little sparrow. It is sitting and tweeting happily, twittering, chirping on a branch. It is sitting on a little twig which is connected to a branch which is connected to a big banyan tree.
Okay.
And then Swami says a huge storm came. So huge that the whole big banyan tree began to quiver and quake and shiver and shake. The branches shook much more. The twig started snapping away. What happened to the little sparrow? Swami asked. And kept quiet, you know. And my friend told me that the suspense was so much that they were, yeah, what happened? If a whole banyan tree is shaking because of the storm, what could have been the plight of that little sparrow? So they were all in their mind asking, yes, Swami, what happened? What happened to that little bird? What happened to that little bird? And then Swami, you know, in a kind of anticlimax, Swami said, nothing happened to the sparrow, because when the storm came, it just flapped its wings and flew away. You know, it seemed like an anticlimax at that time, but the next statement that Swami made, you know, that is the climax, I feel. Swami said, the bird has two wings. Every one of us have two wings. The wings of self-confidence and faith. If you have the wings of self-confidence and faith, you need to depend only on them. You need not depend on the branches and trees which the world is. Your support should not be the world. You should not be anchored in the world. Be anchored in your own ability, that is your self-confidence, and in the power that your Lord has, which is faith. And then, no storm in life can ever unseat you or unsettle you. That was a lesson that Swami had given.
Amazing. And in fact, it's such a powerful analogy, you know. Of course, when Swami says self-confidence and faith, it kind of, should I say, I think it was meant for those boys, so a very strong message, but when you just look at it as a general analogy, it's so strong. Because so many things which Swami says, be in the world, but you know, don't be off it.
Wow.
Right? That's another message where you say, you know, you are on the branch, but you're not dependent on the branch.
Yes.
I think everything, even in our professional life, we have to earn for our living. And Swami says, you know, let not your life depend on that earning which you're doing. And so, I think endless are the lessons we can learn from nature.
Really, speaking about birds and Swami, I mean, one final, maybe, because this is a poem that Swami had written when he wrote a letter to his students. And in that he concluded with a poem which says, the bird with you, the wing with me.
Right.
The foot with you, the way with me. The eye with you, the form with me. The thing with you, the dream with me. And so are we bound, so are we free. You in me and I in you. You know, for a long time I used to wonder what is the actual meaning of this poem, because as you said, on contemplation, the different facets of a message is seen and you can get different messages. in relation to this story that Swami said about the sparrow on the branch, I just felt that just like you cannot have flight without a bird or the wing, just like you cannot walk without either the foot or the way, you need your foot, you need the way also, then only you can walk. Just like you can't have sight without the eye or the form, you need your eyes, you need a form also, then only you can have sight. And so too I feel is self-confidence and faith interlinked. People say if we have self-confidence, why do we need to depend on God? Dependence on God is not like depending on others. It is so different and it is actually complementary, both are needed. Self-confidence and faith. So are we bound, so are we free. And I felt that one way to interpret this poem would be that we have to proceed in life with self-confidence, with the wings of self-confidence and faith. Then nothing can ever touch us.
Absolutely, and that's the beautiful message Swami gave that lady in depression. Right, if you do not come out of the darkness,
wow,
how
yes.
can I set you free?
Very right, Prem, correct.
So both are dependent, you know, the what Swami can do for us depends on what we are ready to
do for Swami,
offer in return. So that kind of brings us to the end of this discussion. Dear listeners, the time now in our studios is just a couple of minutes before 2, when you'll be joined for Love to Love by Brother Chandu. We thank Swami for preparing our minds some time. I mean, it's not complete. It's not that we are learning all the lessons that nature and what is around is here to teach us. But definitely, I think we are better off than what we were before we came to know Swami. And before Swami prepared our minds to see these things, we offer our gratitude to Swami for that.
And we also, you know, again make that request that let us, especially in the places where the summer heat is unbearable, let us do our little bit for our feathered friends, keep out a trough of water so that they can drink in it or drink from it or even bathe in it, let them enjoy so that they send their blessings which will come to us in their own way.
And as we leave, I'm going to play for you a qawwali. And interestingly, this qawwali also is providentially so well placed in this discussion because this qawwali, Arvind, is Tere dhar pe jo bhi aaye,
Oh, mere Sai Baba.
Oh, mere Sai Baba.
Khushiyon se tune sab ki jholi bhari hai. Which means
that those who took the effort of coming to you,
all those who took, irrespective of anything else,
you have done the duty of filling their lives with happiness.
And that includes the birds and the beasts too.
Right. And it is so beautiful, the discussion which we came to, that you take the step forward and God will fulfill His part of the promise. And so all those who took that first step and came to you, you fulfill the promise of
fill their life with joy.
With their joy.
And with this song, we offer this segment, as always, at the lotus feet of our dear Swami and are thankful with hearts filled with gratitude for this beautiful opportunity to speak on His own channel from the spiritual capital of the universe.
दिल ये धड़कता है तेरा नाम लेके चेहरे पे रंगे बहारे आती है तुम ही से पाऊं खुशियां साई ओ मुझ में भी तेरी खुशबू समाई है ओ तेरे दर पे जो भी आया तुमने खुशियों से झोली भरी है तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साईं बाबा, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, झोली भरी है ओ बाबा झोली भरी है, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, नजरे उठी है तेरे जलवे में, तेरे इन कदमों में जन्नत बसी है,
तुझ में हमारी सांसें बसी है, तुझ में हमारी सांसें बसी है,
तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साईं बाबा, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की, साईं के बंदे अब हम हुए हैं, धनी सामा धनी दम गरे मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की,
मोहब्बत ने भर दी है
मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की,
मोहब्बत ने भर दी